Welcome to Advanced Nuclear, the official podcast of UCAN Power, where leading experts, innovators, and policymakers explore the latest developments shaping the future of nuclear energy.
Welcome to the Advanced Nuclear Podcast. I'm your host, Jim Howe, on behalf of the United Coalition for Advanced Nuclear Power. In this podcast, we're talking to leaders from industry, government, and academia about securing America's energy future by bringing new nuclear technologies to the civil power market and for bolstering our national security. So what is advanced nuclear? It encompasses a wide range of technologies, from microreactors that can be transported by truck to massive gigawatt-scale light water reactors with enhanced safety features and everything in between. These advanced reactors come in a variety of designs and can be employed not only for electricity production, but for providing high-temperature heat for a variety of commercial applications. And advanced nuclear includes the fuel and manufacturing supply chains needed to support these new nuclear reactor technologies. Our guest today has a leading role at one of the most exciting advanced nuclear companies in the nation, Natura Resources, which is based in Texas. I recently met our guest at an event hosted by the Nuclear Energy Institute and came away very impressed with the company he represents and the openness in which he discusses the company's path forward. Jordan Robison is the Vice President of Engineering and Program Management at Natura. Jordan is highly educated. He holds a bachelor's degree in physics, a master's in mechanical engineering, and an MBA, and has previously worked in both technical and management roles in the semiconductor and oil and gas industries. He's been with Natura Resources since 2020, and today he oversees critical program development for the company's demonstration and commercial variant reactors. You can learn more about the company at www.naturaresources.com. Please check them out. So Jordan, thank you so much for being here and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jim. Happy to be here.
Great. Well, so let's just start off talking about you just a little bit. You're a seasoned professional engineer. You've got the mechanical engineering degree. You've got an MBA. What in the world led you to turn your talents to nuclear?
Yeah, so I spent the first couple of parts of my career working in semiconductor industry, working in the oil and gas industry. Really, at the end of the day, you go home and say, okay, the work that I did today helped make sure that a semiconductor IC and an iPhone would work, or I helped a refinery improve their efficiency so that they can make gasoline a little bit cheaper. And I mean, those are all great things to do, but the opportunity popped up to jump in on this project and saw an opportunity to really have an impact on the world. Right. An opportunity to supply abundant energy, clean water, medical isotopes to diagnose and cure cancer. Having a mission like that and the opportunity to have a global impact by working on a technology from an engineer's perspective. I remember telling my wife that, hey, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity to work on a project that could really make a difference in the world. And so that's really what drew me in.
Yeah, and that's something that drives a lot of us in the industry. So thank you for that. That's actually very inspiring, and I'm glad you jumped in. It's a pleasure to see people with your talents in the industry. But you know, as far as the company goes, Natura Resources is one of the advanced reactor companies that, quite frankly, has flown under the radar for the last few years, especially in respect to some of the larger SMR projects, like what TerraPower is doing and what X Energy is doing with Dow. You're also one of the companies, though, that's best poised for timely deployment of your first and subsequent reactors. Could you please just share with us the backstory? You know, when was Natura founded? What are your plans for demonstrating your technology?
Sure. So Natura was founded in 2020. So we've been around for, we'll have our fifth anniversary this year. So we've been around for a very short period of time, and we've taken a different path to what we're doing. So we're not a big DOE funded project. We had just come into existence when the big advanced reactor demonstration program opportunities were out there. And so our goal and what we're doing is deployment of liquid fueled molten salt reactors to bless the world. And the path that we've chosen is to do that starting with a university research reactor deployment. And so we started in 2020. By August of 2022, the group that we've worked with Abilene Christian University, Texas A&M University, the University of Texas, Georgia Tech, we had a construction permit for our demonstration reactor submitted to the NRC in August of 2022. That construction permit was approved on September 16th of 2024, making that only the second advanced reactor construction permit that the NRC has ever issued, and the first for a liquid-fueled advanced reactor of any kind. And so the fact that we've started small and worked through kind of the university research reactor pathway for that initial demonstration, I think is one of the reasons that we've kind of flown under the radar. But it's also one of the reasons that we've been able to go from founding in 2020 to not only having a facility constructed to house that research reactor, but having an approved construction permit from the NRC in less than 5 years. And so, yeah, we've flown under the radar a little bit, but while we've been flying under the radar, we've been moving incredibly fast. And at this point, I think we're lined up to have one of the first, if not the first, advanced reactors actually deployed and operating in the nation.
That's a great backstory, and thank you for sharing that. In fact, there's a, if you go to your website, there's a great time lapse of the building of the Science and Engineering Research Center at Abilene Christian University, and that's where the reactor, the research reactor, is going to go, and that's your demonstration, right? It's like a 1/100th of the actual full scale.
Right. Okay. Right. So the facility at ACU, we actually broke ground on that facility in March of 2022. And so that was prior, 5 months prior to even submitting the construction permit application. And what allowed us to do that is the fact that it's a university research reactor. So you can put a university research reactor into a pre-existing multi-use facility. And so the building, because it, we broke ground in March when we submitted the construction permit in August, it was a pre-existing facility. It was under construction, but it was considered a pre-existing facility. And so broke ground in March of 2022. Facility was completed in August of 2023. If we hadn't taken that path, then we wouldn't have started construction on the facility until September 17th of last year, once the construction permit was approved. And so that's another one of those kind of strategic decisions that was made in going the university research reactor path that allowed us to, with ACU, and that's ACU facility, start construction prior to ever even submitting the construction permit application. And you're exactly right. That is, it is a university research reactor. If you go to the NRC website, it is a license to Abilene Christian University. They'll own the reactor, but it really is our demonstration system. It's a 1 megawatt thermal system. It shares many of the same features and characteristics of our commercial system, but it's an opportunity for us to show that, one, the technology can be successfully licensed with the NRC. We've shown that. We've had a great working relationship with the NRC. The NRC did exactly what they said they were going to do, and they did it in less time than they said they were going to do it. It allows us to gather the data necessary to support the commercial system, because the NRC doesn't license based upon assumptions. They license based upon data. And so when we approach them with our commercial system, which we're engaged with them right now, we're going to be able to approach them with real-time data of how one of these reactors actually operates to support their review of that commercial system. And it allows us to hone in on cost and schedules. Right. So that's one of the big concerns with advanced nuclear technology and nuclear technology in general is, can you build these reactors on time and on budget? Well, we're going to exercise those muscles with our partners, Zachry Nuclear Engineering, Teledyne Brown Engineering, Shepherd Power, different groups that we're working with to deploy this first reactor. We get to learn our lessons on a really small system so that we can be more efficient and more cost and schedule certain moving forward on the commercial system.
That's fascinating. And you've got a couple of projects already lined up for the commercial variant there in Texas. Could you talk a little bit about those projects?
Yeah. So we're looking at two really, it's kind of two first of a kind deployments. And so the first of those is looking at the Permian Basin in West Texas and working with the Texas Produced Water Consortium. If you're not familiar with oil and gas operations, when you go in and frack and drill an oil and gas well, one of the things that's produced, and I think it's about a 5-to-1 ratio, is water that comes back out of the well related in comparison to the actual oil and gas that you pull out of the well. And so for one barrel of oil, I think it's anywhere from 3 to 5 barrels of produced water come out. And that produced water has anywhere from 3 to 8 times the salinity of salt water from the ocean. And then it's got all sorts of other chemicals and whatnot in it. And so we're seeing massive quantities of produced water produced in the Permian Basin in West Texas during these oil and gas operations. And it's a drought-starved region. You're then taking that produced water and you're re-injecting it into the ground. And it's causing seismic activity in the area. And so working with the Texas Produced Water Consortium, they're working with those that are actually generating the produced water. So your oil and gas companies, they're working with the groups that are gathering that produced water and bringing it together in a central location. And they're working with the groups that are developing novel technologies to actually clean up that water so that it can be used for agricultural purposes or even potentially drinking water at some point. And so one of the things that they need within that whole process is they need large quantities of energy. Like I read an article the other day that talked about, you know, multiple gigawatts of energy that are needed in the Permian Basin just to support the produced water desalination. And so that's our first kind of first of a kind deployment of our 100 megawatt electric system is with the Texas Produced Water Consortium in the Permian Basin to provide energy, not only to support oil and gas operations in the Permian, but to support these produced water desalination pilot projects so that we can show how we can take this produced water and actually clean it up, use it for agricultural purposes, and really help out that area of the state. The second deployment is working with Texas A&M University down on their Relis campus. And so Texas A&M, we've been working with them since 2020 as part of sponsored research agreements in the development of our demonstration system. And they'll tell you they want to be the nation's leader in nuclear engineering. They want to be an example out there of deploying advanced reactor technologies. And so they selected four companies to come in and deploy advanced reactors on their Relis campus, which is a 2,400 acre facility that's out on the west side of Bryan College Station. And so we were actually down there this last Tuesday looking at the different sites, exploring which areas were, you know, would work best for our technology to deploy down there. And so, yeah, really looking at two, it sounds kind of silly, two first of a kind deployments at the same time, but that's kind of the beauty of small modular reactors is if I'm going to build one, I might as well build two in a shop. You know, if I'm rolling those vessels and I'm doing the welding, if I'm building those skids, I might as well build two at the same time. And so looking at both of those opportunities to kind of step beyond our 1 megawatt thermal demonstration system to the 100 megawatt electric commercial system.
Do you have an estimated guess when we might be commercially deployed? Is that a 2030s thing, or do you think you can get there a little bit quicker?
Yeah, so I'll just point to the demonstration system. We're going to submit our operating license application to the NRC this year, and we're targeting to have the demonstration built by the end of 2026 and going critical in 2027. Commercial system, we see a realistic path to deploying by 2030, if not sooner. So we're already engaged with the NRC on pre-application engagement for that commercial system. We're identifying a couple of sites, both at the Produced Water Consortium, the Texas A&M Relis campus, and working with the NRC, really trying to see how much can we leverage from the demonstration reactor to expedite the commercial reactor as quickly as possible. But 2030 is the timeline that we're aiming at.
Super. And, you know, just one thing that kind of stood out when I was learning about Natura was how you've kept your staff small at the company, but you've leveraged the expertise of the universities that you're associated with and the commercial industry partners that you're associated with. Can you talk about that? Because that's a little bit different paradigm. A lot of these companies build huge, you know, internal staffs. How is that working out, and what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so our focus has been speed to power, speed to market. How quickly can we deploy? And so when the project started, it started with the four universities. And so it started with getting sponsored research agreements in place with Abilene Christian, Georgia Tech, Texas A&M, and the University of Texas. We've added to that since then, working with the University of Idaho and also working with Texas Tech University. But back in 2020, if you said, where does the expertise exist around advanced nuclear technologies, it was primarily at the universities and at the national labs. And so brought those universities in under sponsored research agreements. They developed the construction permit application. They developed the initial kind of preliminary designs of the system, working alongside Natura Resources. And then as we've continued forward and as that project has advanced, we brought in Teledyne Brown Engineering to do front-end engineering and design on the demonstration system. And then we brought Zachary Nuclear Engineering in to do detailed engineering and design on the system. And all along the way, the previous relationships that we've had have continued forward. So we're still working with all those universities. Teledyne Brown is working as a sub to Zachary. So those that we worked on the front-end engineering and design with at Teledyne Brown are still working on the project on the detailed design engineering. And we're continuing to build what we refer to as our industrial coalition. So the thought process being is that Natura, we want to be the experts in regulatory licensing with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in the design of liquid-fueled molten salt reactors. If other capabilities exist in companies out there, then we want to leverage those capabilities as much as possible because we think it allows us to move faster. And so Zachary is a 100-year-old company that's been building large power generation facilities for a long, long time. And so I don't need to go hire welders and designers and drafters and guys to design pipe runs and structural supports for pipe. I'm going to lean into Zachary's capabilities there and utilize their experience instead of trying to build that from the ground up. And the same sort of thing on the manufacturing side, right? I don't need to go build a facility outside of Abilene and learn how to roll stainless steel vessels and weld and meet ASME code and get end stamps. I'm going to lean into Teledyne Brown Engineering, who's been around for 70 years and is already an NQA-1 qualified facility and has all of that experience and expertise that we can draw upon, primarily because we think it allows us to get there faster. And so anywhere where existing capabilities exist, whether it's operators, manufacturing, engineering, design, we're reaching out and we're developing those relationships and bringing them together so that ultimately the whole team can go to a customer and really provide them with a turnkey solution for their power needs.
Excellent. So about the technology, you brought it up a couple of times. You know, it's a molten salt system for both the coolant and the fuel. That's
yes.
Somewhat unique. Can you just talk about it? What are the advantages of such a system? How does it compare to a traditional light water reactor and so forth?
Yeah, so we are a liquid-fueled molten salt reactor. It's actually pretty interesting. If you'd have gone back, say, 4 or 5 years ago, people would tell you that molten salt reactors have one of the lowest TRL levels of advanced reactor technologies. But if you go right now and you look and say, who has an approved construction permit from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, it's two technologies, and they're both molten salt reactors. It's our work with Abilene Christian University and our liquid-fueled molten salt reactor system, and Kairos Power with their solid-fueled molten salt reactor system. And so here's the primary benefits of a molten salt reactor. One, we're utilizing molten salt as our coolant instead of water. And so our lithium fluoride, beryllium fluoride fuel salt melts at around 450 degrees Celsius. Our reactor will operate at an average core temperature of 600 degrees Celsius. And that salt doesn't want to turn into a vapor until you get upwards of 1400 degrees Celsius. So we're operating at very high temperatures, but very low pressures. And there is no risk of any sort of gaseous release of that molten salt because it can't get up to that 1400 degrees Celsius temperature. And so the higher temperatures that we're operating at allow us to be more efficient as we go from thermal energy to electric energy. And the low pressures that we're operating at allows us to, one, we don't need huge concrete and steel containment structures. I think last I saw the concrete in your standard LWR accounts for about 30 to 40% of your overnight capital costs. And so it's a huge expense in your reactor construction. Because we're at low pressure, we don't require that significant concrete and steel containment structure. So it decreases our cost. It increases our safety. If there ever is any sort of breach of the system, the salt will come out and almost instantly turn into a solid. So it's still radioactive, but it's contained. It's not a radioactive steam cloud that you have to worry about. And then the other primary benefit is because we're using a liquid, a molten salt as our coolant, we can actually dissolve our fuel into that salt. So our uranium tetrafluoride fuel is dissolved in that salt. So it's a liquid fueled system. And so we don't have a mechanical containment structure around the fuel that limits the lifetime of the fuel, such as you would see in your standard solid fueled system or even a TRISO fueled system, where you can get a certain amount of burn up of your fuel before that cladding is no longer safe. And so then you have to pull that fuel pin, let's set it aside and call it spent nuclear fuel. With the liquid fuel, we're going to see much higher fuel utilization. We have an online refueling system. So as we need more fuel, we simply add more fuel to the system. And then the idea is that you take that fuel and you take that fuel salt and you clean out any fission products that you need to clean out. You add more fuel to the system. And so it's just a much higher efficiency system as far as fuel burn up, fuel utilization. While also, just a side aspect of this all is we know that there are various isotopes produced during the fission process, different fission products that have really good benefits for medical imaging, medical diagnostics, potential medical treatments, as well as nuclear batteries, things of that nature. Those isotopes are produced in solid fuel systems and they're contained within that solid fuel rod or within that solid fuel cladding. So those fission products are produced, but you can't get to them. Because we're in a liquid-fueled system, those fission products exist in the salt, they exist in the gas, and we've got multiple chemistry teams working right now on determining how can we isolate and capture those different fission products and pull them out of the system. And so really a lot of benefits. Ultimately, our goal is small modular reactors, so factory fabricated in an offsite facility, shipped on the back of the truck to the site, trying to keep the systems as modular as possible. But when you bring the modularity together along with the liquid fueled, the low pressure, the high temperature, really develop a system that is optimal for energy production and high process heat production for those that need the high process heat.
So going back to the safety case, if you have a worst case scenario, do you need human intervention, or is this kind of inherently safe, or just kind of the physics take care of itself?
Yeah, so everything is being designed with passive safety. So the demonstration system, it has a drain tank down below the graphite core. We pneumatically push the salt up into the core and then use a pump to do force flow circulation around the core. At any given time, if we want to shut that reactor down, we have multiple valves, multiple gas lines that connect the top of the reactor headspace to the bottom of the drain tank. And you simply gravity drain the system back into the drain tank. For the demonstration reactor, I think it takes less than a minute for all the salt, all the fuel salt, to leave the reactor and go into the drain tank. And really, you drop, I think, a quarter of the level in the core and the reactor shuts itself down. And so passive safety, same sort of thing with the commercial system, designed with passive safety in mind, such that no operator intervention is required to shut the reactor down. No emergency backup systems need to initiate in order to keep the reactor safe in a shutdown state. Everything is being designed such that if anything ever happens, you simply walk away from the reactor and all the passive systems engage and the reactor is in a perfectly safe state.
Very helpful. Thank you. And you mentioned the manufacturing as well. Is that basically you build modules at a central location? Is that the plan for the 100 megawatts? Is that all these modules are built and then shipped to site so you don't have to do, I mean, how much does that help you on the construction side on site?
Yeah, it's huge. Right. So the more that we can deploy via modules, the more that we can manufacture offsite, it's going to decrease the amount of craft labor hours that we have to deploy onsite. And so we're demonstrating that with the demonstration reactor. We were looking at it the other day. It's anywhere from 8 to 12 modules that make up the demonstration reactor. And just, you know, you look at the different support systems that sit down in the trench with our reactor. Think of it as a shipping container without the walls on the side. So it's a steel frame with vessels placed in there, different tanks, compressors, blowers, instrumentation and control systems. All of that's fabricated offsite, and then you install those modules. And then your work onsite is simply connecting those modules together. And it's the same idea for the commercial system, right? We want to do as much of that fabrication offsite in a controlled facility as possible so that you have a centralized, qualified workforce. You've got a facility that has all of your quality programs in place. And so you can increase your quality and decrease your cost as you're doing that over and over again in the same facility. And you don't run into the problem where you're going to different places all around the nation and trying to find a very special nuclear qualified workforce in order to do large stick-built construction, which is something we've only done a couple of times in the last several decades, really, with Vogtle 3 and 4 in Georgia. And so if we instead can centralize that manufacturing in a single spot and centralize that with a workforce under a quality program, then we can produce a really high quality product and roll it off an assembly line and produce them really as quickly as we possibly can.
And I can validate the technical prowess of modular construction in the shipbuilding industry, for example, where back in my Coast Guard days, we had a 425-foot ship being built, and they built it in, I think it was a dozen pieces. And then they would kind of lower the pieces into place and they would fit exactly. And you had all the wire runs and pipe connections within a millimeter. They would fit for the one, you know, the segment that was already in place. So yeah, the technology absolutely exists to do this in a modular fashion. And I commend you for pursuing that. It seems like a smart business approach. You know, the fuel supply issue has come up a lot. I don't know what your fuel, you said UF4, I think, is what you're looking for. Is that enriched above 5%? I mean, is the fuel supply going to be a limiting factor for a while until that stands up? Or how are you addressing that?
Yeah, so the demonstration reactor will operate with 19.75% enriched HALEU. The commercial system, recognizing the global shortage of HALEU, will operate with less than 8% enriched LEU+. We would like to be able to refuel that commercial system with HALEU because then it's just smaller quantities of fuel that you have to add to the system. We originally intended on a fully HALEU operating system for the commercial, but made that kind of strategic pivot a couple of years ago once we saw that the HALEU shortage was going to be a significant concern. And so, yeah, operating with less than 8% enriched LEU plus for our system, uranium tetrafluoride form, so really kind of a green salt that actually goes in the system.
That was another very smart business decision. I think the 5 to 10% is going to be available in the U.S. this year, is my understanding. So that's terrific that you've got a supply chain that's actually in existence. So
we've got a lot more options with the 5 to 10% enriched than the 19.75. That's for sure.
And you talked a couple of times, Jordan, about the regulatory approval process and that you're already engaged with NRC. You've got, you know, how is that going? I mean, I got to be honest, you know, I know virtually every commissioner. David Wright's going to be terrific there. The previous Christopher Hansen was terrific there. Yep. I think there are some of the best professionals in the business. And I've heard some really good stories from a few other companies with their engagements with the NRC. What has your experience been?
Yeah, our experience with the NRC has been fantastic. If you'd have asked us 4 years ago, what is the single greatest obstacle that you're going to have to overcome in order to deploy advanced reactors? Our answer at that point would have been the regulator is getting through the NRC. That is not our answer today by a long shot. And so working with the NRC has been fantastic. Like I said, we submitted our construction permit to them in August of 2022. That construction permit was approved on September 16th of this last year in 2024. We had 80 plus technical reviewers on that review. NRC spent 15,000 hours reviewing that application. When our team went up to Rockville to sign that application, which I wasn't even planning this, I just looked in front of me on the conference room table, is that it's right here. We got a certificate of the molten salt research reactor here on our desk. I think the NRC was just as excited as we were to sign off on that application. And so it's really been, you know, working as a university research reactor, there's no NRC licensing fees. And so one of the things that we learned later in the process is that allowed the NRC to actually bring in some additional reviewers. And so because they weren't billing us for the work, they could say, let's bring this junior level reviewer in so that they can learn about what we're doing here. And they used it also as kind of a training opportunity for their technical reviewers. And so I think it's really going to set us up well as we now move into the pre-application space. One, the project manager for the ACU license application is the same project manager for our commercial application. Many of the technical reviewers that were on that construction permit for the demonstration system are going to be the same technical reviewers that are on the project for the commercial reactor. And so the NRC has been great to work with. They've learned about our technology. They learned about who we are. Our director of licensing, Ben Beasley, was a division director at the NRC, was the project manager at the NRC for the Kairos Hermes application. He's been leading that process on our end. And one of the things he'll say is that when the NRC is issuing you a license, one of the things they're saying is not only do we sign off on the technology, but we also trust the people that we're working with, that we trust that they're going to do what they say they're going to do. And so through the development of the demonstration reactor, we've given the NRC the opportunity to learn all about our technology and how that technology is going to move forward into the commercial. But it's also allowed the NRC to get to know our team and build a level of trust with our team as we move from the demonstration to the commercial system that I think is really invaluable.
That's a very good thing to hear, that you've got such a positive working relationship with the regulator. And you've also talked a little bit about, though, your customer base and, you know, some of the, you know, other applications aside from electricity production, you know, with this high temperature output that you're producing. What are you looking at for other potential applications aside from the desalination and others? What are you looking at?
Yeah, so we've had conversations across the spectrum. And so when you start looking at oil and gas refineries and they're taking significant quantities of the actual product that they're producing and turning it around and burning it in their systems because they need the high heat. We've talked to groups that are doing ethylene production that need 1,000 degrees Celsius. You start looking at some of these other things such as hydrogen production and carbon capture technologies, groups that need not only high process heat, but high quantities of electricity and are wanting to do it without the carbon footprint. Really, the opportunities there are endless. You know, the big one that everybody's talking about nowadays is data centers. I can look out a window here right behind me, and one of the first deployments of Stargate is on the horizon. You know, and they're looking at a 1.2 or 1.4 gigawatt data center that we're watching from our windows every day going up. And that's a, you know, by the by the scale that we've been hearing about these data centers, that's going to be a small one, you know, as we go out and talk about building 5 gigawatt data centers that need large quantities of electricity. So the liquid fuel molten salt reactor aspect, the fact that we're operating at 600 degrees Celsius and have that thermal energy, you know, that's twice the operating temperature of your standard light water reactor. And so it does open up a lot of opportunities for those high process heat applications. Like I said, we've had conversations across the spectrum of those groups that need those high temperatures and are wanting to do it with the zero carbon footprint. And we're going to be able to meet those needs.
And is it about 300 megawatts thermal for your output or a little bit less? Because I know it's 100 electric, right? Is that the plan?
250 megawatts thermal, 100 okay. megawatts electric. So we're anticipating about a 40% efficiency on going from the thermal to electricity transition.
Gotcha. Okay. So Natura is privately owned. I mean, I can't buy your stock and, you know, you're not dependent on the government for keeping right. it alive. How has the investment community, because, you know, people who are going to want to buy these reactors or by the way, what is your plan for that? Are you going to sell the reactor? Are you going to sell license to technology? How yeah. does that all work out?
Yeah, so we are privately funded. To date, we have raised $78 million in private funding. We're actually going through a round of fundraising right now that's going very well. And it's been in a, you know, our really the background of a lot of us here in the company is oil and gas. And so it's been a little bit different because it really is kind of more of a almost a technology play as you look at it, where you go and you raise capital, build value, raise capital, build value, and so forth. And so, yeah, entirely privately funded, not relying on any DOE funding or anything like that at this time. But yeah, as we move forward, it really kind of depends upon the customer. So our primary business model is built around licensing of the technology and really leaning into our regulatory expertise with the NRC. And so being able to go to a customer and providing them with a license to the technology and take them through the licensing process with the NRC, recognizing that some customers may raise their hand and say, yeah, we want to own, we want to operate. While others, such as a data center, may say, we want nothing to do with owning and operating, in which case we have our partners that we bring in, groups like Shepherd Power, who we're working with, that say, hey, we're interested in owning and operating micro reactors. Maybe we're interested in owning and operating small modular reactors and doing that. And so looking at that from a lot of different ways, recognizing that really we need to get those first of a kind deployments out there so that all of a sudden these projects are bankable and you can actually go out and, you know, secure just standard project financing in order to build them. But it's really kind of getting over that big first hurdle of a first of a kind project that we're focused on to try to get that out there and make these projects where all of a sudden you're talking about project financing. How quickly can I bring that project financing in and how quickly can I deploy these reactors?
So we've already talked about some very wise business decisions the company has made, but there's a fortuitous decision, and that is you're located in Texas. And right now, Texas is going, I hate to say hog wild, but they are really aggressive in trying to bring advanced reactors to their state and be a leader in these technologies. When I look at what the Texas legislature is doing based on Jimmy Glatfelter's great work with the commission that was looking at advanced nuclear, I mean, there could be a lot of money available to, you know, cost share, you know, support deployments in the state. But aside from Texas, are you looking outside the state for customers? And how about internationally? Are you picking up any traction there?
Yeah, we know the opportunities are there. We haven't really started exploring internationally yet. We have had conversations outside of the state of Texas. It's kind of hard to ignore what's happening here in the state with the excitement around nuclear. Our CEO, Doug Robison, was on that Texas Advanced Nuclear Working Group, was one of the kind of leaders within that working group. And we're seeing the state step up. And one of the things that we'll consistently say, so we're in Abilene. We're about 2.5 hours west of the DFW Metroplex. You go another 3 hours to our west and you start hitting the Permian Basin. The Texas has an oil and gas industry because the rock exists, because the oil and gas is in the ground and it's there. And the thing that we've been kind of preaching for a long time now is the advanced nuclear industry can start anywhere, right? It's the goal is you're building these things in one spot and you're deploying them around the country. There's no reason that Texas shouldn't be a leader in the deployment of advanced nuclear technologies. And if we want to be a leader in the deployment of advanced nuclear technologies, we need to step forward and really take that leadership position. I think that's what we're seeing at the state right now. So the state of Texas legislature meets every 2 years for 140 days. We're right smack in the middle of that right now. So there's lots of things happening down in Austin to support the development of deploying advanced reactors, not only here in the state, but throughout the nation and throughout the world. Texas is the eighth largest economy in the world. You go down to Houston, and that is the energy capital of the world. There's tons of opportunities. The expertise exists here as far as how to build big, complex systems, how to really disrupt the energy industry. And so we see a lot of opportunities here in the state. We see a lot of opportunities to build our reactors here in the state and deploy those reactors to meet the needs of our nation and to meet the energy needs of the world.
Yeah, with Stargates and those sorts of projects, I mean, we're talking, you know, tens of gigawatts are going to be needed just to, you know, keep them on the right path. So I think there's plenty of customers out there and you know, maybe they can use a lot of molten salt reactors. We'll see. So we're kind of at the end of our time as we come to a close. What's the most important thing you'd like our audience to take away from this conversation?
I think the big thing is that advanced nuclear is here. It's moving fast. I think there's a lot of great developments taking place in the space right now. One of the things that our CEO will consistently say is this isn't the Hunger Games, right? We don't just need one reactor to come out at the end and be successful. The need is so huge that we need a lot of us to be successful, right? So we like seeing companies like Kairos stepping out there and get construction permits and breaking ground, and seeing TerraPower submitting their construction permit to the NRC and these groups. We want many technologies to be successful. And so the opportunities here, the need is huge. The industry is really growing, and it's really exciting to see what's going to happen here in the next few years as really start talking about starting to see reactors deployed, right? That's been one of our things from day one is, we get kind of told all the time that we don't do a very good job talking about ourselves, that, you know, too often we'd rather stick our noses down and just get to work and start building things. And that's what we've been doing, right? Just going out and let's start building things. Let's build some test loops. Let's build a reactor. And so as you start seeing those reactors actually coming online here in the next few years, it's gonna be really exciting to see where this industry goes and see how it can meet those energy needs. They're going to do nothing but go up from here.
Terrific. Well, look, thank you so much for a terrific conversation. We've learned a lot about Natura Resources. It really was a pleasure speaking with you. And thanks for all you're doing to bring this technology to market. I mean, I agree 100%. We need successes. And, you know, Abilene Christian University is going to be one of the first successes for a small demonstration of what you're going to bring to the commercial market. So good luck with everything. So thanks for your time.
Yeah. No, Jim, thanks for having us. And thanks for having me. And like I said, Abilene's 2.5-3 hours west of DFW. I'll say it here. We've got the first advanced reactor demonstration facility in the nation sitting on the ACU campus. And we love for people to come out and see what we're doing and actually put eyes on it, because it really is something you got to see with your own eyes to believe what's taking place. So we welcome anybody to come out and take a look at what we're doing out here.
Sounds terrific. Well, hey, that's a wrap. Thanks so much. Thanks for your time. And thanks to our producer, the mastermind behind this podcast, Ms. Kimberly, and to all the team at UCAN Power for their support. Please check us out at www.ucanpower.org. Until next time, this is your host signing off with thanks to you for tuning in to the Advanced Nuclear Podcast.